Next, what do you do during the periods between sessions? So, right in early dawn time, no sooner you get up, you wake up, you first of all make a correct motivation, thinking that, oh, I'm going to make the best use of this whole day, that I'm not going to be actually driven by the different delusions. And today, I'm going to reflect the best I can on the different topics of the scriptures, and that I'm going to engage in as many virtuous actions of the bodhisattvas as possible by generating bodhicitta, and that aspiring or that desiring that the negativities or the hindrances may not overcome you. After making proper motivation, then you can start washing yourself. And some people, before getting the breakfast, they may be kind of driven by a sense of a little bit anger or hatred, whatever. So then, relax yourself, having breakfast, and then you can start with your proper meditation. And then after doing slight meditation, you can then start your day by engaging in different kind of actions, even including some kind of quarrels and so forth. So then, in the end of the day, so you just reflect on how you have used your whole day. And then if you have used that fruitfully, so you imagine that, oh, now I, as a follower of Buddha Shakyamuni, I've been quite successful in using this whole day very successfully and powerfully. And whereas if you have done quite a big deal of negativities, then you must do confession and then making resolution that, oh no, so from tomorrow onwards, I'm not going to engage in the same kind of negativities. And then you can retire to bed. And during your time for meals, so make sure that you first of all make offerings to the Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, to the three jewels. So what kind of verse do you use for offering? And the answer was to the three jewels. And what Sisona was just asking as to in what way you offer meals to the to this jewel of Dharma, that is the truth of cessation. So this part, actually making offerings to the three jewels and to your gurus and so forth, is very important. And after retiring to bed, before you actually go to sleep, so you again reflect well, to the best you can, on the virtuous thoughts as bodhicitta, wisdom of emptiness, renunciation, and so forth. So if you can really do that, then whatever amount of sleep that you have, so that will turn out to be virtuous. So because it is said that the state of sleep, actually it is categorized as something, whether or not that's going to be virtuous is to be determined by the other factors. So the factors primarily would be the original motivation that you have generated before you retire to bed. So the text reads, as the behavior of sleep occurs between sessions, it should also not be wasted meaninglessly. In this regard, the content of the body consists in lying down during the middle part of the three parts of the night, on the right side, placing the left leg on top of the right one, and sleeping like a lion. As for mindfulness, you should rely on the fact that until you fall asleep, it pursues the predominant virtuous action that you have cultivated during the day. Therefore, you can sustain your spiritual practice, such as meditative stabilization, even while asleep, similar to when you are not asleep. And there's next, controlling the sense doors. Controlling sense from being deviated to the objects of objects of attachment and aversion, so forth. So that is actually, at times when you really encounter So Lama Tsongkhapa, in his Lama Nyingchenmo, the great exposition and in the middling exposition both, he says as to how to really be cautious of your behaviors at times of encountering with the causes of negativities, and at times you're not encountering that. At first, you should be very cautious as to be to make sure that you don't encounter with those causes, those objects objects which has the capacity to let arise in you different negativities. And then, despite these efforts, if you really encounter with such kind of objects, then how to really control your senses? So these two, actually, Lama Tsongkhapa says, is very important. So the text reads, controlling the sense doors. In this regard, when the six consciousnesses arise in dependence upon the object and sense powers, after that attachment and aversion arise toward the six pleasant and six unpleasant objects of mental consciousness, guard against the arisal. So first, and then also the next point, that is vigilance. So here, first you have to be, you have to know, be aware of the falls of different negative emotions like attachment and so forth. And then next, you have to make a resolute conviction that no, I'm not going to go after these negativities. So by being aware of these two factors, or those two realities, so we have to make sure that your mind don't go after those negative thinkings. So the text reads, vigilance. If any mental affliction arises while you cultivate mindfulness, having become aware of it rather than grasping it, eagerly abandon it. So the next topic, the reason why both analysis and placement are necessary for meditation. So it says that whatever meditation that you do, make sure that it be complemented by both the kinds of meditation, the placement meditation and the analytical meditation. So basically, when we speak about meditation, it is to bring about transformation of one's mind. So how to do that? So it is not just making kind of conviction or kind of promise that, oh, I'm going to be a kind man, so that I will not do. So how to do that then is that, first of all, you should really be convinced that indeed there is the possibility that I can bring about transformation of my own mind. And then, respectively, you need to employ efforts and enthusiasm. So for example, if you say, oh, may I generate great compassion towards all other sentient beings. So how do you do that? First of all, you should employ all kinds of reasons and logics to support the reason, the benefit of actually meditating on this and that. And then through doing so, then naturally it will arise in you the desire, a sense of a strong urge to engage in this meditation. So through that, if you do the meditation, it becomes fruitful. So the Buddhist meditation very much emphasized on the use of intelligence. So because of this, the usage of intelligence, then we are actually looking forward to the transformation of emotions from negative to positive. And by way of employing the valid cognition, valid reasoning, and so forth, we try to make the negative emotions gradually being transferred to the positive attitudes or positive. So in relation to this topic, Lama Tsongkhapa has been very emphatic about placing the importance of analytical meditation. So Lama Tsongkhapa has been placing so much importance on placement of the analytical meditation. So in this relation, he's only saying that in the olden times, during the time of Shantarakshita or King Tisung Desen of Tibet, so they were invited some of the Chinese practitioners who emphasized on single-pointed meditation. So as such, the Tibetans established a separate kind of department of single-pointed meditation department, and another department for translation bureau, a translation bureau. And then they also they established a separate department or a section, the section for the ordained monks. And then there's another group for the tantric practitioners. So in that very department, all the section for this single meditation practitioners. So they're actually in that section where the single-pointed meditation section. So there we see that they first spent time studying and then emphasize so much more on the single-pointed meditation. So then gradually what happens was that kind of system or tradition became a little bit kind of degenerated, and then eventually it came to the point of saying that, oh, any kind of studying, any kind of reflection is actually obstruction to achieving enlightenment. So then they say that, oh, it is only by way of single-pointed meditation which can possibly lead one to the state of enlightenment. So it is because of this flaw occurring that the Kamalashila, one of the great Indian masters, he was invited from India to Tibet to really counteract that negative system, which emphasized singly on single-pointed meditation, totally opposing the analytical meditation. So as such, it is not. So there can be instances whereby you first put interest in doing studies, learnings, and so forth, and then reflecting, and then gradually through gaining kind of quite a command over those learnings and the objects of meditation. There, then you can really do single-pointed meditation, focused on that very object. But right from the beginning, if you are simply being opposed to learnings or reflection, and then simply dedicating yourself to single-pointed meditation, so that is actually quite a flaw. As such, Lama Tsongkhapa here in this part has been rejecting that kind of position, which by way of 100% saying that it is wrong to do reflection while following the path to enlightenment. So this is the area where Lama Tsongkhapa was placing enormous emphasis as to the importance of placement analytical meditation, saying that the analysis forms a very important part of following the Buddhist path to enlightenment. So let me read through this the main text. Now, if you ask, what are the parts that are analytical meditation, and what are the parts that are placement meditation? For meditations such as the cultivation of confidence in the spiritual teacher, the great meaning of the freedoms and endowments, and the difficulty to find them, death, impermanence, karma, and its effects, the faults of cyclic existence, and the cultivation of bodhicitta, analytical meditation is necessary. For each of them, minds of great strength and the ability to subdue the mind for a long time are necessary, because if they are absent, their counterparts, disrespect, and the like cannot be prevented. And because the generation of these minds depends on nothing but a meditation analyzing them by means of investigating them individually time and again. For example, just as intense attachment arises, if you meditate on an object of attachment, a lot while exaggerating its pleasant features. In the same way, intense aversion arises if you think of many unpleasant features with regard to an enemy. Hence, in regard to meditating these parts, these processes are similar, whether or not the aspect of the object appears clearly. But the mode of apprehension of the mind must be intense and long-lasting, which is why you should do analytical meditation. In the context of practicing calm abiding, which enables one to place the mind on whatever single object one wishes, since someone whose mind cannot stay on a single object will not be fit for mental quiescence. If he analyzes again and again, if it is necessary to practice placement meditation on that,